All right, guys, I'm Jonathan McKee, and we're going to be talking about connecting with over-connected young people. I'm sure when you guys think of young people, you don't in any way ever run into young people who are staring at devices like this, right? Not at all? It's kind of a miracle that they don't all have bruises on their foreheads from running into walls, from just walking around like this all the time. It's funny because I have three kids of my own now, 19, 21, and 23, and they've been growing up through all this because 2007, the iPhone came out. 2012, our country passed the 50% mark of now carrying smartphones in our pockets. Here we are, 2017, and honestly, our country is just trying to figure this out. We are honestly just figuring out. I just rented a car at Charlotte yesterday, and whenever I rent a car now, the first thing I do is I check out the steering wheel because there's new buttons all the time because car companies are trying to figure out how can we get people to start hitting buttons and talking through the car instead of pulling out their devices and killing people, because that's what's happening right now, because we don't know what we're doing. It reminds me of when cars first came out and there were seatbelt plates in like 1962 cars, but they didn't demand seatbelts. And all of a sudden they realized, oh, people are dying. Maybe we should get people to wear these things. So honestly, we're just figuring this out. And it's one of those things where living through it now, where my kids had normal cell phones and it switched to smartphones and all this, where kids used to be able to call, which they never do, and text, which they did too much. And you remember probably 5 years ago hearing those numbers about, do you know the average teenager texts 3,000 text messages per month? Well, it's funny, those numbers are actually down, but they're on their devices more. And it's because now they don't just text, they also can snap. They can also share stories. There are so many different venues. They're communicating just as much, if not even more, but using different venues. So we're going to talk about connecting with these overconnected young people, because for those of us who deal with young people, who minister to young people, we want to get face-to-face with them, but they're having a more difficult time actually communicating face-to-face because they're so used to communicating to screens. So it becomes more difficult. My son always used to tease me. He'd be like, so Dad, when you're, forget it, Dad. You don't understand. You never had a phone. And I said, I had a phone, all right? I had a phone. Our cord was 35 feet long. Yep. And I could go into the pantry and I would be talking to my girlfriend, hey baby, what's up? Yeah. What's going on? Yeah. You know, so I knew what it was like. And then I remember, like many of you, when the first cell phone came out. Oh, we all wanted that thing. I mean, that thing's good for two things, talking on the phone or throwing at somebody, because it's a brick and it's very large. And it's funny when technology starts coming out with all this new stuff. Here's a Radio Shack flyer from over a decade ago, okay? It's got everything. I mean, look at this, all the stuff you can buy, radio and answer machine and handheld recorder and computer and video camera and music player and cell phone and calculator. You can buy all this stuff, or fast forward to now, you could just buy this one thing right there. That's it. And it's got it all. And now our kids are growing up with these devices in their hands at very young ages. As a matter of fact, we're starting to see kids. I teach a workshop called Parenting Pre-Smartphone Kids to mothers of preschoolers. And moms come up to me and they'll talk about these situations. Okay, so my five-year-old was at school and a friend showed them pornography. And it's just starting younger and younger because we hand our kids devices when we're driving places. And as a matter of fact, if we don't know how to use our devices, we hand it to them and say, can you fix this? And they do, because they understand it more than us. And it's not just cell phones, it's all kinds of little devices. And even the devices, it's not just games anymore. Now if you're gaming, you're talking with someone across the country who you've never met before, who you hope is a really good guy, who's gaming with our kids. And frankly, the amount of information that we're processing since 2008 to now, we're processing up to four times more of the information, and it's changing everything. In my last session, throw your hand up if you're in my last session. Okay, I promised people in the last session I would tell you how it was changing, because believe it or not, it's changing everything. And let me give just one example. The example I'll give is the selfie. Okay? If I would have said the word selfie 5 years ago, you would have said it, huh? Because it wasn't a word 5 years ago. Now, our teenagers 4 years ago started knowing it, and it probably went on the map with the Oscar selfie of 2014 is when really the word selfie got on the map. But now, everybody's got a selfie, and everybody's talking about the popular selfie from this celebrity and this and that, like the famous Kardashian sister selfie right there. Can you tell which one's which? I never can tell. But the thing is, the average millennial takes 9 selfies a week, spending 7 minutes on average perfecting each one. That's 54 hours of selfies each year. That's 25,700 selfies in a lifetime. That's something that's less than 5 years old. Less than 5 years old. And this little, this one simple task you could do with this device we carry in our back pocket is changing the way people think about themselves, because we're now raising a generation who is looking at themselves differently. Because let me tell you something, it was tough when I was in high school. There was bullying, there was teasing, there was fighting, there was some rough stuff. But the cool thing was, at 2:43, the school bell rang, I went home, and I had peace and quiet till the next morning, about 7:30 in the morning, when I re-entered that world again. Now, at 2:43, they enter a whole new world right here on this device that they carry in their pocket, and there's just as much bullying, there's just as much measuring up, there's just as much self-esteem issues, if not more, because we're actually seeing more and more experts coming out and saying, hey, so many young people are not only addicted to the like, they're living for that like, they're doing all kinds of stuff which is pretty much unhealthy because they're going for that dopamine release, and there's some weird science in it. We're talking dopamine and actually oxytocin released with certain social media. So all of a sudden you get someone who's getting used to these hits, and like a rat going back to pellets, they're kind of more and more and more. And we're finding out that this isn't good for a lot of young people. As I'm talking to people like at my Parenting Pre-Smartphone Kids workshop, I was talking with a lot of young moms about how much this is affecting our young kids. Because a study in pediatric survey, parents of children in urban, low-income, or minority communities, they said exactly how many young people are on devices. They just wanted to know. And they found in this particular study that 90% of parents said that their children use mobile devices of some sort. 75% of 4-year-olds have their own mobile devices. 21% of 4-year-olds own a gaming console. 20% of 1-year-olds own a tablet computer. 28% of parents said they use a mobile device to put their children to sleep. I promised people in my last session I would answer this question. Here, pop quiz. What age does Nielsen describe as the sweet spot when most kids get their first mobile phone? 8 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old, 14 years old, or they don't have cell phones, they use pagers still. It's one of those. Yell out the answer you think.
8.
We're hearing all this. A lot of people are going for, oh, it must be the youngest one. It is 10, actually. 10 is the sweet spot, and that is when most young people are getting their mobile devices right now. The top activities, actually, this is the top activities they enjoy is texting, downloading apps, and accessing websites. If you want to know the specifics, it's actually 10.3 years old that the average child is getting a young device right now. How many of you guys, your ministries work with people 10 years old? Just kind of curious. Okay. How many of you guys, your ministries work with teenagers? Okay. How about tweens, 8 through 12? Okay, good. The average age for a child getting their first smartphone is 10.3 years old. 55% of kids use a tablet as a device of choice during car rides. 64% of kids have access to the internet via their laptop or tablet. 3% of kids get social media account at 11.4 years, and 11% get a social media account when they were younger than 10. Now this is fascinating, because when you think about social media, you've got kids, 10 years old, getting a gadget of some sort, and immediately they're like, I want to be on Instagram, I want to be on Snapchat. And a lot of them, even if mom and dad don't know, because again, a quarter of them have access to these devices in their own bedrooms. We're talking 8 and 10 year olds, okay, access in their bedrooms. So when it comes to all the social media accounts they'd like to be on, many of them would love to have their own Instagram, they'd love to have their own Snapchat, which brings up the second question I'm going to ask you. How old do kids need to be, according to COPPA, Child's Online Privacy Protection Act, that's the US government there, do they need to be 8 years old, 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, or 13 years old? Yell out the answer.
13.
Correct answer is 13 years old, and that's according to the Federal Trade Commission. It's called COPPA, Child's Online Privacy Protection Act, and for them, if you want to be on Instagram, if you want to be on Facebook, if you want to be on Snapchat, I'll use those as the three biggies, 13 years old. So you're saying, well, wait a second, I know tons of 10 and 11 and 12 year olds on Snapchat, or what is that? Well, it's because when they signed up, an 11 year old goes to sign up on Snapchat, asks them their birth date, they punch it in. Oh, I'm sorry, you're not old enough. So what do? They immediately, oh, their friend goes, no, just put this year, they tell them what year to put in, so they put in a different year. Funny, if you ever look at today's college kids, if you look at their Facebook page, A lot of today's college kids, their Facebook page says they're 2 to 3 years older than they are, because when they got Facebook, I won't make you guys raise your hand, you millennials in here, but because when they got their Facebook, same thing, you know, oh, I had to be 13, or, you know, there was a time where it was 16, but anyway, so it's 13 years old is that magic age, and for a lot of them, you know, they're lying, and this is just a normal thing. Oh, you just have to lie to get on Facebook. And a lot of parents either don't have a clue or allowing their kids to lie. There are some social medias, like Lego has a new one coming out that is for under 13, so there are some there. But let's be honest, young kids want to be what their older brothers and sisters and their friends are on. They want to be on the Snapchat. They want to be on the... They want to be on the Snapchat. Anyway, just the millennials are laughing at me there. But this is, as we talk about social media, one of the big questions I have is, even the word social, we talk about social media. It is interesting because as you look at kids today, you know, young people today, they ought, obviously they look very social, don't they? I mean, look how social they are. So gregarious in conversation. But let me be the first one to say, today, if not, that this is not a young person problem. This is a human being problem. This is an adult problem. Sherry Turkle, New York Times bestselling author of Reclaiming Conversation, just wrote an entire book about this. And she said this. She said, studies of conversation both in the laboratory and in natural settings show that when two people are talking, the mere presence of a phone at the table between them or in the periphery of their vision changes both what they talk about and the degree of connection they feel. Think about this for a quick second. You are out to lunch with your spouse, with your kid, with a friend at work, and you do what most people do, which is you place the phone on the table right there. The mere presence of the phone on the table changes the degree of connection. It's like, you're important to me unless this thing buzzes. And this is what most people are finding out, is that the more social we're becoming, the less social we're becoming. There's studies to it. Let me give you an example one. Here's a study that they did with young people. They studied kids 5 days at an outdoor education camp. And I'm so sorry, I wanted to get the screen bigger. But anyway, we'll deal with it. 5 days at an outdoor education camp. And in short, what they did is they took a bunch of kids that they took their devices away for 5 days. And they studied their communication at this camp. Then they compared them to the control group, which was their friends, who kept using their devices through those 5 days. At the end of 5 days, it was amazing. In just 5 days, these young kids were better able to recognize facial cues. It's funny because, like, for some of them, they're like, wait a second, that look on the face, I know what it is. It's anger, you know, for the first time. And basically what these scholars said in their own complex language was that these preteens improved their communication significantly more than those who were counting on looking at their devices and counting on screens, because those that were looking at screens, and let's be honest, when we first started with this texting, you know, we would end and we would say a conversation and it was pretty clear that the person on the other end wasn't getting it. So we add a smiley face, then emojis came along, right? So now if you're mad, you're like, I hate you. Smiley face. It's okay. You know, we kind of add the emojis to kind of let people know I'm worried, I'm whatever, because texting is not a great conversation piece. Matter of fact, my daughter, I remember, came to me once. It was like 10 at night. She was about a junior or senior in high school. And she comes in, she goes, Mom, Dad, I'm running to Allie's house, her friend Alexandra. And it's 10. What do you mean? She goes, we're in a fight and we're just kind of, it just doesn't work over texting. I need to just talk to her face to face. And we're like, okay. I was proud of her that she says some things just need to be worked out face to face. Because she realized that with texting there was misinterpretation, there's all this. Now, I'm not knocking technology. I love technology. My kids are out of the house. My daughters are 19 and 21, are down 500 miles south of us in Southern California at a Christian college. Matter of fact, one just graduated last week. Yes! Less money out of my pocket. Should I mention my book table, by the way? So now my other daughter's there, but it's funny, we love social media because we use it to communicate with them all the time. We watch their Insta stories and stuff, and we kind of keep up with them and their friends through that because we're 500 miles away. So it's a great tool, but the thing that most experts are finding is with the amount of hours, and when I say the amount of hours, there's people that actually add this up. For teenagers, the average, when you add up the TV, the smartphone, the music, everything, 9 hours a day. Matter of fact, if you want the breakdown, you can get it. And by the way, I'll just let you know, some people right now are like, Jonathan, you talk so fast, it's just, I'm tired watching you. I got tired. On the outline right there at the bottom, it should say, or no, on this particular outline, it looks like it's at the top. I think it says my web address there. Okay. Yeah, it does. JonathanMcKeeWrites.com. You'll see that JonathanMcKeeWrites.com links our website for youth workers, the source for youth ministry. It also links our site, the source for parents. On the sourceforparents.com, we actually have, right there on the front page, we have articles, youth culture window, parenting help, all this free stuff. We have a box that says, articles Jonathan has been reading. And whenever I read any of these studies, I link it right there in the box. You can look at for the last 3 years, every stat that you were madly trying to write down, and you're mad at me right now because you couldn't write it down, I encourage you, go to sourceforparents.com, look at that box, articles Jonathan's been reading. Also, subscribe to our free blog, our free Youth Culture Window articles. We write about this stuff all the time, and when we write about it, whenever we quote a stat, we link it. So you can look at the actual report from the American Academy of Pediatrics, the actual report from the American Psychological Association, wherever. So just so you know, there's a place you can go for this, and my books, obviously, we document this all the time, too. But this is one of those reports, and we wrote a Youth Culture Window article about this when this report came out. So again, our Youth Culture Window articles will have this link. You could spend hours looking at this report alone. This is a report where it goes through and it says how much time tweens, 8 through 12-year-olds, and teens, 13 through 18-year-olds, spend on their smartphone each day, on all these devices, adding up on 8 hours, 56 minutes for teenagers, 5 hours, 55 minutes for tweens. And in short, this is a lot of time they're spending on devices. And the experts out there, like here's a bunch of pediatricians from the Kaiser Foundation, they said, we need to give our full attention to anything that takes up this much time in young people's lives. They're saying, moms, dads, coaches, teachers, youth workers, pay attention. If young people are spending this much time staring at devices, it would be good to know what they're gleaning from that. And for youth workers, I encourage this all the time, because some youth workers will say, all we need to know is Bible, that's it. And I'm like, well, good. If you don't know your Bible, turn to Acts 17, because there you'll see the Apostle Paul. And before he went out to reach a group of people, you know what he did? He walked around the town of Athens, and he started looking at what idols they were worshiping. And he didn't start worshiping them. He didn't start just subjecting himself to this stuff, but he looked and he recognized it. And when he starts preaching in one of the most famous messages in the Bible, probably second only to the Sermon on the Mount, he says, people of Athens, I saw so many of your idols. You even had this one to an unknown God. Oh, I know who he is. Let me tell you about him. And he starts talking about the one true God. Then he actually quotes their pagan poets. He did. He's in verse 28, or 27, 28, something like that. He goes, and as your own poets have said, and he quoted Lady Gaga right there. He did. He quoted Lil Wayne right there. Well, whoever Lil Wayne was 2,000 years ago. He quoted Little Antonius right there, okay? Back then. And he says, we are his offspring. Boom. And he used that right there. So it's good for us to know, and I'm not saying go out and start downloading, you know, all of Maroon 5's and all of Nicki Minaj. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it'd be good for us to be familiar with what young people are learning. So we're going to talk a little bit about that today. We're going to talk about learning to connect. And what we're going to do is I'm going to first give you some tools for connecting. And then I'm going to state some venues for connection that I found very helpful for connecting with today's young people. And many of them involve food, because I love food. But anyway, so we're going to talk about that. Let's start with talking about some tools to connect. Hold on, we're going to go on a fast journey right here. Number one tool to connect is what I call one-on-one time. And yes, this is very basic. And if you don't hear anything else today, hear this. I'm a guy who studies youth culture all the time. People bring me out just to do youth culture workshops. I mean, you want to ask about some trend with technology or what kids are watching, what apps, this kind of stuff. I'm not going to tell you this. But yet if you say, how do you make a difference to kids? I'm not going to say, well, use, you know, Instagram. To the number one way you can impact young people today is good old-fashioned face-to-face ministry. Good old-fashioned what Jesus did when he, up in heaven, looked down at creation and he went, man, they are lost. And he, Christmas message, became a man, God incarnate, and he came down and he dwelt among us. And that's the best model of ministry right there, is dwelling among them, is literally going down and connecting with young people face-to-face. Because A lot of young people are finding it's actually difficult to even talk through technology, and I might use technology as a springboard to face-to-face conversations, but face-to-face conversations are where it is at. And it's funny, because when you get in the youth ministry and you see a bunch of kids show up in any youth ministry venue, you'll see a bunch of kids kind of show up, and after the kids show up, then you'll see adults show up, and I always see this. Maybe you see it too. You know, the adults will start to show up. And it's funny to just kind of see how it ends up happening. As a matter of fact, sometimes I always kind of see, as the adults slowly show up, this kind of, I would call it what I call the horseshoe mentality. We've got them surrounded, all right? You know? And I think it's because in America, and I don't know what it's like, there's many countries here, but in America, we always get chaperones at elementary school. And at elementary school, if we go on a field trip, we'll get adult chaperones to come out and kind of control the herd, like we're border collies, you know, keeping the cattle in a herd, you know. And I think there's that mentality. But when it comes to ministry, we don't need chaperones. We don't need chaperones, okay? We need shepherds. We need Sherpas. We need people who are going to not stand around the edge, but people who are going to just get with kids, co-mingle with kids, and look for opportunities to interact. I guarantee if I ran a youth ministry event in this room tonight, I would see a bunch of kids in the middle and I'd see a bunch of adults around the edge. It's what happens all the time. And we need to, in our ministry circles, teach youth workers and teach people that care and love young people that we don't need someone to stand around the back of the edge and be like, you know, talking with the other adult volunteers. So where do you work? Hugh Packard, oh, I work at Intel, that's fascinating. You know, and they have their conversation while the kids are doing their kid stuff. We don't need that. We don't need chaperones. We want people that want to spend time with young people. And the greatest effect that we're going to have on young people is our time with them, interacting with them face to face. Don't get hung up on the one-on-one. People will come up to me and say, our denomination or our organization doesn't allow one man with one boy. We always have to have two adults. Hey, if you got two adults and two kids and you go out to Taco Bell, then go to Taco Bell, and when you get there, say, hey, Chris, I want to talk with you really quick. And go and take Chris in the one booth and take Jake to another booth, and you're in a public place. You've got two adults, two kids. There's no rule that says you can't sit at different tables. And honestly, and minister, because one-on-one time is powerful. There's things Chris is going to say in front that he wouldn't say in front of Jake because he's embarrassed. And one-on-one time is very powerful. So I constantly look for that, and I look for opportunities to try to do that. My book, Connect, which sadly we sold out of already, but you can find it on my website and you can find it on Amazon. I spend a whole chapter, sadly, talking about boundaries, because in this day and age, there's so much abuse, there's so much stuff that we as an organization need to be very careful placing adults in the lives of young people. And in my last recruiting session, we touched on it really quick, background checks, this kind of stuff for our workers, but we need to be careful. And I always had rules for my volunteers. Guys meet with guys, girls meet with girls. By the way, that's not foolproof. So public places, you know, which is really sad, because it used to be fun for one of my adult volunteers to bring some kids over to the house to play Xbox or something. And we try to make it public places only now, because we don't want even the accusation of abuse. So we have to be careful. I spent a whole chapter on that in my book, Connect. So boundaries are very important. I'm even talking more about that. But this one-on-one time is so important that we get in these conversations. There's research on it because, as a matter of fact, in the youth ministry world in the last 10 years, people have been asking, okay, there's all these kids walking away from their faith. They're walking away from their faith and they leave their faith after high school. Why are they doing this? And there's all kinds of people who have tried to, you know, how do we get faith that sticks? There's actually a book called Sticky Faith, and there's a research team that has tried to find out what is it that makes faith stick in their lives. And they've actually looked for common denominators. And one of the common denominators they found was that young people who had five adult mentors in their lives, count them, five. Not just mom, not just dad, but mom, dad, maybe Sunday school teacher, maybe a youth pastor, maybe their friend's mom. And I thought about this for my daughter. My daughter had not only us, but she had her papa, she had her uncle, she had three different friends who she would stay the night at their house, and their moms, they would end up just talking with these moms. My daughter probably had like seven mentors in her life that she could go to. As a matter of fact, Sticky Faith actually says in some of their articles, they said this, and I found this fascinating. The more adult mentors who seek out students and help them apply faith to daily life, the better. Among 13 different ways adults support high school kids, two variables stood out as significantly related to sticky faith over time: feeling sought out by adults and feeling like those adults helped me to realistically apply my faith to my daily life. Young people are looking for adults who talk about stuff that matters. And when I say talk, I should replace that with the word dialogue. Dialogue, back and forth, not monologue, lecture. Kids don't need people to lecture. They get plenty of that. But people who will listen and who will dialogue with them. There's this guy out of this small little church in Southern California, Saddleback, and this guy Josh, he was there for years, and it was funny, while everybody else was arguing about stuff that doesn't work anymore, this doesn't work in youth ministry anymore, games don't work, this doesn't, Josh wrote an article saying, here's four things that are never going to change in youth ministry. Number one, caring adult volunteers. Number two, one-on-one time with students. One-on-one time with students. I see it over and over again. The experts will cite our connection time, the Christ model of coming down and dwelling among, of face-to-face conversations. Notice Jesus in his ministry did that. He didn't just sit there in the tabernacle waiting till people came to him. He would go out. And it was funny. You did see him in the synagogues. You did see him in the tabernacle. You saw him speak. You saw him speaking to large crowds. But you also saw him on the side of the road with some dejected sinner. You saw him walk into a crowd of people and you saw his disciples go, oh, whatever you do, Jesus, don't talk with that guy over there in the tree. Don't talk with him. Bad news, and he's bad for your political career. All right? And Jesus is like, so that guy up there, I shouldn't talk with him, right? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. And Jesus is like, Zach, dinner tonight. What? Oh, there goes all your votes from the liberal city. But you know, so, but it's like, it was tough because this is what, and he like walks in the middle of town and his disciples are like, let's go around Samaria. He goes, no, let's go right through it. Let's go around that lady that's hanging out by the well because reputation, he's like, hey, what's your name? Let's talk. Let's talk about water. Let's talk about life. And she ends up going and getting all her sinner friends. She's like, he knew everything about me. Her friends were like, everything? Whoa, that's a lot. I mean, this is, Jesus did ministry. And I tell you, we can learn a lot from that ministry because there's a lot of one-on-one conversations. I talk a lot more about that in Connect. I'm sorry I don't have any more copies. They all sold out, but they're on my website. They're on Amazon. One-on-one time is so important. Don't underestimate it. When I do parent workshops, I tell parents, because parents are like, how do we navigate this culture with our kids and this and that? And how do we, with all the devices they have, and they're expecting all this, you know, advice about here's the best app to monitor your kids, here's this. And honestly, the first thing I tell parents at a parent workshop is get face-to-face with your kids. Look for these times where you're hanging out with your kids, where you, as parents, slide your own stuff out of the way, you put your own gadget down, and you hang out with your kids. Find those times. Sit down and talk. Maybe when your kid has exhausted the battery of every device in the house and they go to bed and every device is on a charger, and even if they're 16 years old and they're like, I'm too old, you don't need to tuck me in anymore, you go up to their bedside and you sit down and you're like, hey, I just want to come up and kiss you goodnight and pray with you. And they're like, ah, okay. And for 10 or 15 kissing goodnights in a row, nothing. Silence. Okay, fine. And on the 16th night, a parent will have a kid look up at them and go, Mom, when you were my age, did girls ever talk about you and say something that wasn't true? And all of a sudden, she'll just unload and you'll have an amazing conversation. And it takes those quantity time moments to get that quality time conversation. So one-on-one time, yeah, don't underestimate the power of it. Let's look at number two. Number two, notice. Because a lot of parents will say, Jonathan, I've tried to talk to my kids, they won't talk. Youth workers, I try to talk to kids, but they don't talk. Guess what? Young people want to be noticed and heard. Kids desire to be noticed and heard. Whenever I go into a venue where I'm talking with young people, I play a game. And what it is if I see young people, my goal is to, within 5 minutes, find out what it is that they want to talk about and unleash them to talk about it. Because I find that most young people want to talk about something, and most the people they spend most of their time with aren't good listeners. Think about it. Their friends are punks, all right? Their friends aren't good listeners. If the people they hang out with, if they say to their friend, oh, I'm having the worst day, what's their friend say? Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you about my day. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of friends who are like, really? Tell me about it. Go ahead. I'll soak it in. You know, they aren't good listeners. They're all selfish little teenagers, all right? They're punks, okay? And the thing is, So nobody listens, and mom and dad is usually a little too busy. And I, within 5 minutes, my goal of talking with a kid is to find what it is that they want to talk about. And sometimes it's written right on their t-shirt. Led Zeppelin. You know, Maroon 5, whatever, you know, I said, Maroon 5, so, you know, what, so is that, you big fan? Did you go to a concert? Oh yeah, I love their music. What's their favorite album? What? Fast forward 5 minutes, they're talking and telling me everything about music and about everything I like, and I'm sitting there just listening. That's my game. My goal is to get them talking so much, I wish they would shut up. That's my game. Within 5 minutes, I try to do that. And most young people want to talk. And the funny thing is, if we stop and notice them, and most adults don't notice kids. We separate the culture. We kind of, adults at this table, kids at this table. And pay attention. Pay attention to what young kids are doing. How many moms and dads of teens or tweens or even elementary school kids we got right here? Okay, I'm curious. Okay, so you're taking kids home from soccer practice, from school, and you ever got your kids and other kids in the car too, right? Carpool, got it? You're dropping kids off. I tell you, this is a great time to just notice, because when you're up front, kids will forget you're even up there driving. Okay, moms and dads, you're driving, just have your German Shepherd ears, all right, just listening, okay, have your German Shepherd ears, and as you're sitting there driving, listen, because they'll start talking, they'll be talking about what stuff they're doing, who they like, who they don't like, what apps they downloaded, and sometimes one of your kid's friends will even say something, and your kid will be like, shh, 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 and that's when you're really, row, row, you know, listen up really good. You know, you can learn so much listening. And sometimes it'll be the stupidest conversation. If you have middle school boys in your car, they'll be arguing about, oh, I'll tell you what the best burger is. Tell you what the best burger is. The best burger is Whataburger. No, it's not Whataburger. Tell you it's not Whataburger. No, no, it's this one. And they'll be sitting there arguing about the best burger. You can use that. Later, if you want to connect with a kid, walk up and be like, hey, I'm thinking about Whataburger right now, so let's go to Whataburger. That's if you're from Texas. But, you know, it's really not that good. But anyway, so the thing is, you know, it goes right through you. But the thing is, you know, it's too many details, sorry. But the thing is, sometimes my inner voice just comes out. We can use this, and when we hear them talking about this, but the thing is, most adults don't notice kids. We're so in our own world, we don't take time to notice them. And the thing is, most young people would love to be noticed. Matter of fact, you could see them screaming to be noticed on their devices, because most of them, you'll see them, and they've got these devices in their hands. And a lot of them are just desperately looking for someone to like them. A lot of them are looking for it in all the wrong places. We should not only notice the fact that they want to be noticed, but we should also probably notice what they're absorbing in. Let's refer back to that, our pediatrician who said, we absolutely must be aware, we must give our full attention. Well, it would be good for us to know, what are families watching together? And depending on your culture, here in American culture, if you look at the top shows and just kind of see what it is that families are watching together, and you ask young people, by the way, what their role models are from like the current judges of their favorite show, or last years judges of that show, and what did they learn from those judges, from those shows? If by chance this stuff is affecting young people, then we're probably starting to see some of their attitudes and behaviors change. And that's what we are seeing. But this is affecting even the youngest kids, because we sit our youngest kids in front of stuff. And as a matter of fact, there's even these award shows that actually kind of say, oh, hey, young kids, what are your favorite shows? So you can find out what the favorite cartoon shows are, what the favorite Henry Danger TV star is, you know, what their favorite game, Just Dance 2017, what their favorite movie is. And some of these movies aren't necessarily kids' movies. Some of the role models aren't necessarily kids' role models. And you can look at some of these, and for example, like their favorite choice female star is Selena Gomez. A lot of parents haven't ever watched a Selena Gomez video. What is Selena Gomez singing about? What are kids gleaning from Selena Gomez? Favorite song, Juju on His Beat. A lot of parents maybe have never even seen that music video. But young people are staring at these devices all the time, and this is tough, because if you go to the Billboard charts, for example, and you look at what the top music is at any time. This is tough for parents and youth workers, because we could sit there and we could try to, look at the charts and say, okay, I'm gonna be a good student of our culture. And let's say we find, like last year, for example, Rihanna had a song that was at the top of the charts for most of the year. It was called Work. And so we can sit there and go, oh, okay, so we're going to go to Google and we're going to type in Rihanna, Work, lyrics, and we'll find out, you know, and we can find out everything about it. Let's try that right now, as a matter of fact. Hold on. Just going to switch. We only got one sound. We're going through this Okay, here we go. Ready? So let's try it right now. Rihanna, work, lyrics. Let's try this together. All clear, right? This is what happens all the time. We sit there and we think, okay, well, that's cool. I'll just Google the lyrics. Sometimes, I mean, you look at people Google rap lyrics. One of the top songs just a while ago was this rap song where they kept referring to these girls as a thot thot, a T-H-O-T. And you're like, well, I don't know what a thot thot is. That hoe over there, that hoe over there. And it's funny because there's for some of us, it's honestly to even, so maybe we Google Rihanna work lyrics meaning. And then maybe we find out a little more research as to, okay, what is she saying? But this is a tough job. And by the way, that's one thing that we at the Source for Youth Ministry and the Source for Parents try to do. We write these articles trying to keep you guys aware of what's going on in our culture. Because again, this was the biggest number one last year. So if you look at the charts in any day, like for instance, we looked at the charts today, this week, boom, right here, there you go, May 5th. And you look, you know, and you can learn a lot. The number one song is from this guy, Kendrick Lamar, who says he's a believer. He talks about how Jesus changed his life. The song's called Humble. Do you have any idea what he's singing about? I'm about to say something and you're going to be offended. And if you're offended, that's okay. You should be offended. Okay? His chorus is, bitch, sit down. Bitch, sit down. This is a guy who claims that he's a Christian. You know? That's the number one song right now. Okay? And if you are offended, good. I'm glad you are. Because it's the number one song. And this is what young people are listening to right now. Do you know what they'll see if they throw a lot of these music videos in the top 10 on YouTube? When I do parent workshops, I warn parents. I say, I'm going to give you a glimpse. And I just sometimes give them a glimpse of the top 10 videos. I say, I just want you to know. Because parents are always like, oh, I know how bad it is. And I show them the top 10 and they're like, I had no idea how bad it was. You know? And I'm just like, I just want you to realize, because parents, I'll let you in on a little secret. I wrote a book to parents about how vital it is for us to talk to our kids about sex. About the truth about sex. When I wrote this book, Dr. Kevin Lehman read my book and he said this. He said, in a world full of explicit lies, today's kids need parents who are willing to tell them the explicit truth. And the fact is, sex is all through the Bible. And God's amazing plan for a man and a woman who commit to each other in marriage and sex is an amazing gift from God. But in the church, we're so scared to talk about it. We're so scared to talk about, oh, I'm going to meddle. I'm going to meddle. At this conference, they said, would you please not bring the book that says sex on it? Because we don't want people to be offended. Are you kidding me? It talks about God's plan for sex. My response was, do I need to rip the pages out of the Bible that say sex in it? I told you I was going to meddle. We as a church are afraid to talk about this. You know what the number one place where young people are going to find their answers to questions about sex? Google. You know the number one place where kids are exposed to pornography? Google Images. Young people go and they've got a question about sex because they're listening to the number one song or they're listening to a video or they see something on TV and they hear some phrase and they're like, what is this? And they Google it and they're like, oh. They actually are on Netflix and their parents don't even know they're watching something or listening to something on Netflix. So they Google the answer because why? Mom or dad would freak out because we don't talk about that stuff here. What? You don't talk about truth? The Bible talks about it. The Bible starts with a naked guy in the garden. And God says, oh, it's not good for man to be alone. Let me do something about it. Poof. Naked woman. And Adam says, hey. That's the beginning of the Bible. Then God says, go forth and multiply. And Adam says, I'm on it. Yeah. That's the beginning of the Bible. It's all through the Bible. Go to Proverbs. In Proverbs 5, he says, young men, enjoy the breasts of your wives and stop looking at other women's breasts. Do you realize how relevant that passage is to today's teenagers? We should be taking teenagers through that passage. Moms, dads, youth workers, we should. But we at a church are like, oh, somebody, we better not talk about it. Okay, good. Then they'll go get the answers from Lil Wayne and Nicki Minaj because they are getting explicit about it. And so they're hearing lies instead of the people who could be telling the truth. I step off my soapbox. I'm meddling. Here's the thing. Young people today spending 2 hours and 38 minutes a day on smartphones, hour and 54 minutes a day on music. And they're hearing this stuff all the time. We need to notice what they're hearing My wife went with me to a parent workshop, and all the parents came back, and they're buying all my parent books. And when they got to the book about having a conversation about sex, they'd go, "Oh, I don't need that one. We had that conversation 2 years ago." And I'm like, "Do you realize they heard that conversation 17 times today on the radio?" You know? And my wife was like, "Why don't they do this?" Because parents don't even take time to notice what's going on in their kids' lives. We need to pay attention what's going on in the world of teenagers if we're going to do relevant ministry. Does that make sense? Good. I hope I upset you a little bit. Number three, fingertip questions. The best way to start these one-on-one conversations with kids is by asking questions. And this is, I'm going to meddle a little bit too. I teach at camps all across the country, and whenever I go to a camp, they'll say, "Give us discussion questions." And so I'll speak, and when I'm done, they divide into small groups, and you'll see cabins, you know, at a camp or at an event, you'll see their counselor with 10 kids around them, and I give them small group questions so the counselor can ask a question and then get answers from young people. Whenever I walk around to those small groups, you know what I always see? Guess who I see talking the whole time? The adult leader. The adult leader's all like, "So let me tell you, when I was your age, trust me, and this, and kids are like, "Second sermon we've heard in the last hour." And they're like that. When we have an opportunity to get them to open up and talk with us. So we need to be an expert at asking questions and getting them to talk. By the way, there's a great role model of this. His name is Jesus. He constantly asks questions. People come up to him and be like, "Hey, what do I do to inherit eternal life? What's the Bible say?" He was great at this. He constantly drove us back to Scripture, drove us back to these. He did this all the time. Follow his model. I had a book back there. It's a jump on Amazon. It's called Get Your Teenager Talking. Over 1,000 questions just trying to get young people to open up. Like, for example, here's the first question. If you could text anyone in the world right now, and he or she would actually text you back, what would you text, or who would you text? That's a great question, because all of a sudden kids would be like, "Adam Levine of Maroon 5, you know, you get this, you know. Well, what would you ask that person? "Do you love me?" You know, what would you open your reply? "Yes," you know, I mean, and you start to learn a little about that. But then when you go down, I have all these follow-up questions, like this one. If you could only text one person for the next year, somebody you already text regularly, who would you choose? Why that person? Who would you really miss texting that year? So what I do is I start with a very lofty, imaginative, fun question, and I get deeper and deeper. By the time you're at the bottom, you find out who's their best friend, who do they talk to a lot, who would they miss talking to. That's the idea. Get them talking. Guess what? Find these issues that they want to talk about and try to get them talking about it and us listening. If we find out that their favorite star is Selena Gomez, and we hear them listening to this song, "Good For You." Here's the lyrics of "Good For You." "I'm gonna wear that dress you like skin tight, do my hair up real nice, and syncopate my skin to your heart beating, because I just wanna look good for you, good for you. I just wanna look good for you, good for you. Let me show you how proud I am to be yours, leave this dress a mess on the floor, and still look good for you, good for you." By the way, parents that tell their kids, "Don't download anything dirty," that has no curse words, so this must be clean, right? So this is the clean stuff our kids listen to. If you saw the music video, if I showed you the music video, you guys would probably drag me out and stone me. So I'm not going to do that. But the music video is her in a shower singing this, in a robe that's falling off her singing this. And it's got like millions and millions and millions of views of young people. They've seen the video, they're hearing this. And the thing I always wonder is, what are young people gleaning from this? And it's hard, because when we see something like this, a lot of parents' response is, freaking out, right? And I say, okay, take that overreaction and turn it into interaction. Find a question and maybe ask a simple question like, "Is she right?" You know? Ask something specific about that to get them. And by the way, in my book, my parenting book that just came out, that I can't think of the title, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, I spend a whole chapter talking about questions, and I actually give sample questions. What about, how do you think she'll think about that decision next week? In America, we got to love our Dr. Phil, right? We got Dr. Phil. And it's funny, because you'll see the stupidest people on Dr. Phil. And you'll see some guy up on a couch going, "Yeah, so I did this and this and this." And where you know Dr. Phil just wants to go, "You are an idiot." You know, he wants to. But instead, Dr. Phil, when the guy goes, "So I tried this, this, and this," Dr. Phil will say, "How's that working out for you?" Great question. How's that working out for you? And it's amazing how sometimes you'll see that confident, you know, stupid guy go, well, not as well as I thought, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, well, and then all of a sudden he'll start opening up and, how did you ask, Dr. Phil? Actually, and he lies back on the couch, and Dr. Phil's all, there you go, there, you know, and he starts up, just because he asked him that. And the thing is, most kids don't have that. Most kids start talking, and adults all, well, that was stupid, wasn't it, you know? I just trained Salvation Army workers, and there was this young man who was a great new worker, great stuff, and he had this kid that came up to him and shared with him and said, I think I got a girl pregnant. This. And he said, he goes, so I had this face-to-face talk with him. I was like, oh, so really? So, you know, and he immediately, I can't remember the word of his response, but it was basically like, oh, well, that was a good one. Da, 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 and it was this, and he's all, so we had a heart-to-heart, we talked, and luckily this kid had a relationship with the guy, so he kind of took it a little bit. But the question I asked the Salvation Army youth worker is not, oh, tell him he did well and it's all fine, but I said, just your tone, your facial expression, your response, did you create a climate of comfortable conversation? Hey, nice alliteration, huh? Create a climate of comfortable conversation where he's going to come back to you and talk with you again. I'm not saying tell him what he wants to hear. It's okay to, you know, tell him the truth. Questions are a great tool to ask them. So tell me, if you had the same choice, would you do it again? So where are you going to go now? How can I help? Ask questions. Questions, if kids come up to us and they're upset about stuff, or kids tell us about a friend of theirs that's depressed, have some of these questions that you know, like, well, how do you think you got to this point? How do you think she got to this point? Get them to start thinking about the choices they made that got there. If they talk about somebody who did something illegal or did something legal that should be illegal, maybe you ask a question like, well, give me two or three alternative ways this situation could have been handled. Last year I said one of the most popular songs was Rihanna's song, Work. The other song was a song called Closer. Here's the chorus. Now you're looking pretty in a hotel bar, and I can't stop, I can't stop. So baby, pull me closer in the back seat of your Rover. That's the chorus, and it's about a hookup in a back seat and how it turns into an apartment. And it's about these two people that used to date, and then they decide to hook up together. This, again, this and Work were the most popular songs of the entire year. And it's interesting because a lot of parents are like, wait, I'm hearing something about a backseat of a Rover. What do I ask? And sometimes when our kids are talking about this, we can honestly just be like, oh, you know, well, how's that line up with what the Bible says? And we can direct this. And not every conversation. We don't want to turn everything into a lecture. And who maybe did that? Maybe Satan? No, I mean, we're not trying to turn into that three people reconcile. But anyway, the thing is, you know, we're trying to create some conversation. Questions are one of those tools that get young people communicating. Fingertip questions. Let's look at number four because I want to stay conscious of time here. What does this go till? Quarter after? What time am I ending? I got nowhere to go. I'll just talk forever. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, here we go. Number four. I'm from California. I'm on California time. It's early. Here we go. Connect using devices carefully. I'm going to touch on this real quick. Because I just know it'll be asked, so I'm going to touch on it super quick. I told you in my book, Connect, I spend a whole chapter just talking about being careful. Today's youth workers always say, I would like to, you know, what can we engage with them on Snapchat? Can we engage with them on Facebook? Can we use some of this technology they're using? I think it's okay to engage them to use devices in positive ways. They've already got, if you've got a bunch of people who've got devices and they're already on a lot of these social medias, you can use some of these social media. I'll give you an example. I created a game called Instant Instagram. And on Instant Instagram, I literally will have a youth group of kids, and I'll say, okay, guys, here's the instructions. We divide into teams. And I say, okay, now I'm going to describe something you as a team are going to do. You're going to pose a certain way or whatever. And you're going to have one person take a picture, and you're going to post it, and you're going to caption it. And then at the first, and what I'm, and then I gave them a hashtag, and those of you that know social media know what this is. And I sit there and I search that hashtag, and the first post I see pop up with that hashtag wins. And I'm like, ready? Go! And I go, boom, post one, a group selfie of your entire team. And so boom, they're all taking pictures. And the cool thing is, they're hashtagging, and now each one of them has a bunch of followers who are all seeing them at church or at, you know, at youth group or whatever, having fun with a bunch of friends and posting this, and they're kind of like, hey, cool. And also now that is a conversation piece of, where was that? You were posting all those crazy pics with all those friends. That looked fun. So it gave them something to talk about with their friends. So there's positive ways where if they already have social media is not pure evil. It's a photo album that many people see where good and bad things are posted. It's okay to post some good things on there. As youth workers, one of the things I always say is be careful when you connect with young people. Because if you're a youth worker, guaranteed you're going to get young people at midnight, 1, texting saying, I got a problem, I got a deep issue. So-and-so broke up with me, I need to talk. And I tell you something, the one thing I say is I'm not going to tell you a time. I'm not going to tell you a time, which you shouldn't. Yeah, I'm not going to at all tell you a time that you shouldn't talk after that time. I'm not going to say that because that would be foolish of me to tell you an exact time because I don't have that time. But the thing is, we need to be careful. I'm not going to tell you because just ask yourself, if I was stood before a judge, you know, and a judge was saying, how did you talk with this young person? And at what hour? Because we need to be ready to defend ourselves. And I would also tell them, be careful what apps you use to connect with young people. Because even if all young people are on a certain app, if that app has messages that disappear, again, the judge. So at 1 o'clock in the morning, you were texting this young lady on an app that has a reputation of being designed for sexting, and the messages disappear, so there's no record. Am I correct? Please step up to the microphone. You know, no, don't do that. We need to think about this stuff. Think through the ramifications of this. And it's okay to have some policies that sit there and say, okay, hey, we can be on Twitter, we can be on Facebook, we can be doing stories, but be careful what you're posting. Realize you've got an audience. And it's funny how much advice out there today is be careful what you let people tape. Be careful what you let people record. How about this? Be careful how you live. You know? You notice that nowadays there's always stuff being recorded. Well, good. Finally, some accountability. We need to be careful how we live. It's in the Bible. All there. And, I mean, don't ask me for a verse because it's all over. 1 Peter 2, 11 and 12. Name it. I mean, it's all through there. We need to be careful how we live because we're being watched by our unbelieving neighbors. And we as youth workers can make a huge impact with young people. It's good to connect with young people through devices, but we need to really think through how to be responsible with that. Long conversation, I realize. On my all-day workshops, I do Q&A after this, and it's interesting. So sorry that we only have an hour to talk about this. Those are some tools to connect. I'm going to jump straight to venues for connection. Let's talk about a couple of these really quick. Venues for connection. One of my favorite venues for connection is two-player mode. Young people love gaming. And I think when we can create venues where we're hanging out with young people, I tell parents this, I tell youth workers this. Youth workers sometimes will have things where they'll have big Xbox championships and stuff, playing games. If you look at this, tweens and teens, some of their favorite activities online is gaming. As a matter of fact, 12 through 17 year olds average 56 minutes a day gaming. We can use this in the youth ministry world and look for opportunities. I can tell you, my son, some of the best conversations I had with him is when walking in the room, instead of saying, hey, did you hit your hour of game time today? Have you done your homework? Have you done your chores? Where instead, if I walked up and said, hey, what are you playing? Where'd you get that sword? Can I try? And I sat down and sat with him and played. When I took the time to enter his world, I'd find within 10 minutes, he'd be like, so dad, where you been traveling lately? And also he just starts asking, I'm like, he's like the youth worker, he's asking me questions. And he would open up when I took the time to enter his world. And young people love gaming, and gaming can be a great place to enter the world. Be careful of the late night, playing Xbox Live, you got your headsets on, and you're doing it. Again, I'd be real careful of late night conversations. Guard yourselves. I'll let you be the judge of that. Number two, venue for connection. Greasy spoon exchange. And that means constantly look for places to dialogue where you're stuffing your face. And let me tell you why. When kids have grease all over their fingers, they don't have a phone in their hand. Okay? And also, Something about meals. A lot of families will have the no tech at the table rule. My book, 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone Obsessed Kid, I constantly talk about that no tech at the table. And you're even seeing tons of secular articles coming out about make certain no tech zones. And the family dinner very often is one of those. Young people, meals seem like a natural time to put tech away and have conversation. Use meals for that. And if you don't know, if you're sitting there thinking, okay, you meet with a kid and they don't talk much and you don't know what to say, use devotional tools. I've two books back in the back table that are good for this. I have one. I know the title might be surprising to you. The Zombie Apocalypse Survival Guide for Teenagers. All this book is a story of three teenagers surviving in a post-apocalyptic world, and in every situation they get in, mom and dad isn't standing over their shoulder. So the question they're asking is, what is right? What's the right thing to do? All that is Our Daily Bread for Teenagers. It's story, discussion questions, scripture. That's it. It's a fun thing. My friend Greg's a pastor. He says this is the only family devotions that our kids will actually do. I know tons of junior high ministries that go through this book and they say, here, read this chapter right there because kids won't do homework. Read it right now. They read it because it's like four pages. And then they go through the discussion questions. I've got a book specifically for guys. I've got four copies left on the back table. The Guy's Guide to God, Girls, and the Phone in Your Pocket. Great thing to take guys through to talk about what it means to be a man of God. So look for opportunities to exchange over a meal. And if you don't know what to talk about, get a nice, cool piece of curriculum. I blog about this stuff all the time. Scott Rubin from Willow Creek just wrote a great devotional for a new believer that you could take a new believer through. It's fantastic. It's from Scott Rubin. It came out this year, and I can't remember the title, but I just blogged about it recently. Number three, Netflix binge bonding. It's okay to, guess what? Young people love technology. I've seen young kids sit down, and I call it Netflix binge bonding, but it could be YouTube binge bonding. It could be, have you ever just seen Instagram stories? You'll see kids sitting down and laughing at Instagram and just laughing for an hour, for 2 hours. They'll sit there and sometimes sit down with them and say, show me your favorite YouTube video. Show me your favorite Instagram video. If they're watching Netflix, parents, if you haven't seen your daughter in 24 hours, go upstairs. She's sitting in her room binging, and she's on season three of Parks and Rec. You know, because this is, young people love binging, and it's okay to sometimes sit down next to them. Say, what are you watching? The numbers are crazy. Basically about 50% of Gen Z and Gen Y, today's teenagers, today's 20-something, stream daily. Over 3/4 of millennials actually own their own Netflix or Hulu or whatever because they love streaming. So this is one of those huge things that, by the way, your family pediatrician, when he gives advice about how to connect with young people and have these meaningful conversations, one of the things they say is co-view TV, movies, and videos with children and teenagers and use this as an important way of discussing important family values. So your pediatrician is saying, use these entertainment media things that they're soaking in to talk about reality. And I blog about this stuff all the time, and I try to give ideas of things you can use. For example, on our The Source for Parents page, we have now a new thing called Netflix Discussions, where, like, for instance, the show Stranger Things, we provide discussion questions for every single episode of those. So if your kids watch that show, then you can ask them. So that's for parents. We do it for youth workers as well with movie clips and music discussion starters. So look for any of these opportunities to use technology to springboard discussion. Those are venues for connection. You guys, I know this was so fast. I was whipping through it. Let me show you some of the books I've got really quick. I'm going to give you a shameless plug of my books so you know what's there, since they aren't there on the back table. I encourage you, jump on my Amazon page. It's a great place to get the books. They actually have some really good prices. And on my Amazon page, you'll see that guy's guide. For those people that wanted the last session and didn't see it about recruiting volunteers, there it is right there, The New Breed of Volunteers. My brand new book, If I Had a Parenting Do-Over, literally, they have it for like $7-something right now. I mean, it's crazy. They've got it for $7-something right now. Best price, I can't even get it for that price. So they've got that stuff. My book, Connect, is on there, or it's on my page. That's how to connect with young people. My book, 52 Ways to Connect with Your Smartphone-Obsessed Kid. This is a book I wrote to parents about how to connect with kids and get them to, without saying, put your stupid phone away, to actually connect with them. And tons of youth workers buy that because of how relevant it is to youth ministry. Same with this one, over 1,000 questions to get teenagers talking. And then that book, New Breed, is also there. I had the pack. Sorry, I don't have it. I do have several of these left, the Zombie Apocalypse Survival Guide and several of these guys' guide on the back table. And I'm selling it as a pack for $20. But if not, grab it, like I said, on Amazon. Please do. You'll also see this about recruiting volunteers for youth workers. And I had a pack for you, but sorry, it's sold out. I was giving stuff away. I do encourage you, if you ever want to bring a workshop like this to your parents, I teach a parenting to smartphone generation workshop. I go out to a city. I preach Sunday morning. We invite people back to come that night. I do that workshop. I do connect with your smartphone obsessed kids, all that. So I encourage you to ask me about that, because that's the main thing I do right now, is actually preaching on Sunday morning and teaching a parent workshop. So fun stuff, and parents really need it today. You guys, thanks so much. It is exactly, my clock says 2:15 because it's California, but it is, it's 5:15. Let me pray very quickly. God, thank you so much for this time. We need you so bad. It's so evident when we look at this culture, we, like the Apostle Paul, probably just feel distressed with what we see. But help us not to overreact. Help us to look for these opportunities to interact with young people and tell them truth. Lord God, give us these opportunities to dialogue with them, not monologue, not preach at them, but be able to dialogue with them about truth. God, we need your help in this process so bad, so we give you, we ask for your help, and we just give you all the honor, all the glory. We pray these things in your precious name. And all God's people said,
amen.
Thanks, you guys. I'll be back there at the back table if you have any questions. Thanks for coming.